Dr. Philip, you're most welcome in our program. How are you doing?
Oh, very good. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And we've been talking about Royal Columbian Hospital now for about a couple of months. It's a hospital that you are associated with. Let's talk a little bit about you. How did you become a doctor and why?
I became a cardiologist because of how much variety of conditions that were present that affect the heart, from emergency care that was needed to the quiet benefits of prevention that you have in the clinic setting. I really enjoyed all aspects of care, and it's one of those areas where the results are usually immediately gratifying. You know, when you see someone get better
right away. That's right. As a child, when you were growing up, your parents in the medical field.
Actually, I the reason I became a doctor probably initially was just to have my dad get off my back about telling me what my plans were for the rest of my life. And then when I told him, maybe I'll go into medicine, he laid off then, and it all worked out after that.
Isn't that interesting? Now, to be in medicine, you have to be quite with a strong stomach, I would say, because, you know, you have to dissect and then you have to look for little veins, you know, and
yeah,
so
were
you squirmish at all?
Oh, no, I mean, I find what I do not something that really comes up with. I mean, I think the part which touches you, the part that makes you very happy about being a doctor, is the human element. You can be smart and you can learn and you can memorize and tell people back what they need to know. But when you're dealing with an individual person and having to confront yourself as a person to try to make sure you communicate with them in a way that makes you human.
Mm.
You know, that's the most rewarding part about being a doctor, I think.
So we've been talking about, you know, personal health of my community, in which we are predisposed to having diabetes or heart conditions. One reason which I have always felt is the weather prevents some people to sort of sweat it out, and you know, so they keep gathering all the fat in their body, which then becomes problematic for them. So a community that is predispositioned for all these ailments, I bet in the last 20 years you must have seen a growth of this community coming to the hospital and using the facilities of the hospital.
Yeah, I think we've also seen the benefits of treatment, both emergency care and preventative care, and there's been a lot of improvements in understanding of what causes cardiovascular disease and how some populations are unique in terms of predisposition, as you mentioned. I've been very fortunate to learn more about you know, how wonderful the food is, but that sometimes there are some concerns that some aspects of the what makes butter chicken so yummy may not be so healthy.
That's right. That's right. So I guess, you know, the saying that whatever tastes fantastic is not good for you, is that then that's true, because you eat a lot of chocolates which are yummy, they're not good for you.
You're telling a German boy all these things. I learned the same thing. You know, I grew up in a community which doesn't really value vegetables very much.
There's
a lot of sweets and chocolates and a lot of sausage
and meat.
Oh, yeah.
So apart from the South Asian community that has this sort of a problem, have you seen that in any other community, that it is inherent or hereditary?
Well, so one of the issues is to try to separate, you know, what is due to diet and what is due to genetics, and how much of that is through the complex interplay of lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there seems to be definitely a higher rate of cardiovascular disease in the South Asian community. There are also some very positive aspects of when an event occurs about the benefits of that community itself and how they pull together and the benefits of family and how many of the patients that I see, I would say the large percentage have supports there. Mm-hmm. There's almost always a family member that comes to the office.
That's right.
You know, there's always someone that's supporting whoever's going through medical issues. It's a terrific group. And I think that once an event occurs and once you apply what you know, that helps. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of a belief that lots can be done to reduce risk. Yeah.
So preventive measures probably are more important than anything else. So right now, if people, because we all know that there is a possibility we would have this kind of an ailment, what are the things that one can do to sort of prevent it all?
Well, I think, you know, we're fortunate that although it is, you know, at times rainy during the winter months, but you can walk with a raincoat and you can get out there and be active. And I actually think people in BC are more active than most people anywhere else in Canada. Mm-hmm. The rates of obesity are the lowest here. The rates of smoking are the lowest in the country. I think there's lots of great things about the lifestyle that is inherently promoting activity.
That's right.
I think people, if they walk 45 minutes a day at a good pace, it's a great start to helping prevent.
45 minutes?
Yeah.
45.
A 45-minute walk, I mean, that could be incorporated throughout their day, you know. I mean, many of us have occupations that might cause us to sit.
Yes.
And so taking breaks from that, walking around, making sure if there's stairs, use them instead of the elevator. If you're parking your car, are you parking it the closest to the entryway, or are you parking it a little further so you can walk a little bit? You know, are you making it a little, always the easy? Yeah.
You're pointing it at me, totally.
No, I wasn't.
You're saying.
I point at myself actually at times, but
parking your car right next to the mall door, so that you don't have to walk throughout the parking lot. Walking from home, not walking from home to work. I come in a car, but I think you are right. If we start taking care of ourselves, we will not go through with all these problems. And at the moment, I think the hospital does need a new cath lab, right?
That's right. So I'm an interventional cardiologist, and and one of the things that an interventional cardiologist does is treat heart attacks.
Yes.
Have to emphasize to our listeners that Royal Columbian Hospital is the busiest heart attack program in BC. That the Royal Columbian Hospital treats more emergencies from a heart standpoint than all the other sites combined. All the other sites combined, which
it's a
very, very busy place. You know, since I've worked there, I think I've had five times where I've worked 24 hours straight, you know, with heart attack after heart attack after heart attack, you know, and variety of emergency settings. And it's one of the best things you could ever feel is the joy of watching someone who's undergoing the life-threatening problem and having that get relieved by treating and unblocking the artery. We're very fortunate as well to have an outstanding surgical team that can help us when we can't treat things with a stent.
Right. To just go in and do the operation. I want to talk to you a little bit more about what happens when a person has a heart attack, or you know, if you can walk us through it, because if you've for 24 hours gone through one heart attack, another, I have a lot of questions from that particular statement of yours.